Welcome, everyone, to episode 97 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to talk about David Fizdale being fired, how screwed the Clippers are without Blake Griffin, and we're going to give an update on the latest in the Jahlil Okafor saga. Before we get underway, wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We would love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter, at FanRag Sports, and for their NBA content, at FanRag NBA. Joining me today, as always, is my co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well today, Brian, especially because of the Donald Trump news coming out that, you know, your country might return to, sanity?
Don't jinx it, Mort.
We've had too many
close calls already. So yeah, we'll keep an eye on what's going on there. We are recording this on Friday with the news that Michael Flynn may have turned on Trump and maybe it seems like he reached a plea deal with Bob Mueller. So it's a fun time to be an American. We're about to pass a ridiculous tax cut that's going to cripple all but the top 1% of the country. Our president's about to get impeached. Good job, America. Way to go, 2017.
Is that the easiest way to turn, like, against Donald Trump? I could just imagine that would be, like, the easiest way to just go against somebody. It's not like, you know, Fredo turning on Michael or whatever, because there was, like, love there. But for anyone turning on Trump, it's just like,
Now he has the Russian mafia coming after him. Michael Flynn's got to go in hiding.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Witness protection is going to be very helpful for him.
At least he can watch NBA games in peace.
There we go. You know who can't watch NBA games in peace anymore is David Fizdale, who unfortunately is no longer a coach in the NBA. He was fired Monday by the Grizzlies in only his second season. Things came to a head Sunday night. The Grizzlies were playing the Nets. The starters were just getting waxed, basically. So Fizdale pulled Mark Gasol among the other starters and did not put Gasol back into the game in the fourth quarter, even though the Nets, I believe, only won by 10 points. So it's not as though they couldn't come back. After the game, Gasol made very clear that he was not pleased with the decision. He said it somewhat diplomatically, but they asked him about, you know, do you have faith in the coaching staff moving forward? And he gave a very telling non-answer. So then less than 24 hours later, Fizdale was gone. Apparently, things behind the scenes with them have not been great dating back to last year even. It sounds like it was kind of an open secret behind the scenes. The two did not like each other very much. But that said, sources have told multiple reporters that Gasol did not, you know, deliver an ultimatum. Basically, he goes or I go. He didn't directly request Fizdale to be fired. He just kind of passively aggressively made his stance very known in the open after Sunday. So Mort, the first question is, did Fizdale deserve to be fired?
First off, I'm gonna give you a B- on the original transition you made there, because Fizdale can watch the NBA. He's a former head coach with a good paycheck. He can afford League Pass, Brian. Obviously,
he can afford it, just not in peace anymore. Now he has to watch his former team get clobbered every night. So I guess
he'll enjoy that one. All right, so it's a tricky question because deserve and not deserve. Does any coach deserve to be fired? Yeah, is Fizdale one of them? Based on his ability to make adjustments on the fly, no. But a coach also has to maintain a healthy player-coach relationship, and apparently he just could not see eye to eye with one of his main stars. You know, that happens. I don't think anyone is necessarily at fault. Sometimes you just meet people that you can't work with. It happens. It's very, very common and normal. And I think this kind of logic applies here. I just think he and Gasol did not see eye to eye. It was a constraint on the team and the potential of the team. And as such, a decision was just made to go in a different way. I don't think the Grizzlies are looking at Fizdale going, oh, he was a bad coach for us. I don't think anyone is looking at that situation and saying that he was a bad coach or he deserved to get fired. I just think it was somehow an agreed upon decision where you looked at the whole picture and went, you know what? We just need to go in a different direction. Like, and that saying has lost its meaning because whenever anyone says that, you're thinking, oh, that's just a bullshit answer. But mm-hmm. I think in this case, it's actually legitimate.
Is JB Bickerstaff the other direction that you're hoping to go into?
No. Yeah. No, that's probably the stepping stone going into what will be ultimately the new direction. No, JB Bickerstaff, I mean, he's just the tank commander at this point.
Right.
And that's fine. And Fizdale, I mean, he'll land on his feet. I can't imagine him not having an NBA job by next season.
A head coaching job or just an assistant job somewhere?
Oh, no. Head coaching job. Oh, wow. Like, no, I mean, look.
Yeah.
I mean, just going over the coach, I mean, you have like a Fred Hoiberg, mm-hmm. who is definitely not as good as Fizdale is. I mean, Hoiberg's after timeouts plays have routinely been horrid. And he, right now, his team is having like, one of the worst free throw rates in league history.
Yeah.
So there are considerable weaknesses within him. So just there, we have one spot where Fizdale wouldn't be the worst. So by that logic, he should definitely have an NBA job, head coaching job.
I get you got Earl Watson in Phoenix, who does not seem like the long-term answer. Jason Kidd, you know, there have been, I wouldn't say rumblings yet, but there's been some question over whether he's the right long-term fit there or if he's basically like the Mark Jackson to the Bucks, basically, like a guy who can get them to a certain point, but they need their Steve Kerr now. Maybe Fizdale's that guy.
And Earl Watson, to just so we don't forget, was fired 3 games into the season. Jay Toronto.
Oh, right. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess there could be, there'll be openings if nothing else. I'm sure, you know, we'll see what happens throughout the next 60 plus games. Because if another team, hell, I mean, we'll talk about this team in a little bit. But the Clippers, like, maybe Doc Rivers decides he doesn't want to rebuild again, and he bounces after this year.
Maybe the team should decide that they do not want Doug around because he's just not that good.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the question about whether he deserved to be fired, I think you're right. It is tricky because, you know, LeBron James, who worked with Fizdale in Miami, when he got fired, tweeted, like, it feels like my dude just got set up as a fall guy. Mm-hmm. And to an extent, I agree. Like, I think what you're saying is right, ultimately. Like, pretty much, you know, if not the number one job, one of the top jobs of a coach is to establish a rapport with your star players. Because if you lose the faith of your star players, you're done. It happened with LeBron, with David Blatt. You know, it almost happened with Spoelstra in Miami, but Spo and Pat Riley were just not having it. And he and LeBron reached a detente for 4 years. But, you know, Blatt, like, again, another 50-plus win coach who just couldn't get LeBron to totally buy in, they're going to choose the player more often than not in that situation. That said, you know, Fizz wasn't the guy who maxed out Chandler Parsons. He wasn't the guy, you know, Conley is deserving of a max contract, but when you've got Max Parsons, Max Gasol, Max Conley, it makes it really hard to round out the rest of your roster. The Grizzlies haven't hit on a good lottery pick in almost a decade. Like, they have a Clippers level of just wasting picks. You know, like, Wade Baldwin in 2016 was a mid-first round pick. He's no longer on the team. Like, that's, you're damning yourself to just mediocrity if you can't get young talent around a big three that you can continue to develop and build around. Because at that point, you know, older guys don't want to stay on cheap deals forever. So you're either cycling through a bunch of guys on one-year deals, which is kind of what they had to do with Tyreke Evans, Ben McLemore, Mario Chalmers. Sometimes they hit. Evans is playing really well right now. Sometimes they don't hit. and the Grizzlies are just, you know, they're not set up to be legitimate contenders, especially when, say, Mike Conley has Achilles soreness and gets knocked out for a couple weeks, which has already happened. When an oft-injured Chandler Parsons has knee soreness and gets shut down for a couple games, which is now happening. Like, they just don't have the requisite depth to survive that, which explains why they are currently riding a 9-game losing streak. So, Mort, I want to read you their upcoming schedule just to give you a sense of how bad this can get before we go into this next question.
But before you do that, I just want to come up with, or just mention one thing. I'm listening to Golden Days by Jack McCallum right now. And apparently in 2009 during the draft, they really were all in on Steph Curry. Yeah, but Curry just did not want to go there, refused to work out, and all these things. And the Grizzlies were apparently ready to draft him anyway. And this is where I just forget who actually vetoed the whole thing and said, just no, if he doesn't want to come here, it's just, I'm not running that risk. So instead they took Hashim Thabeet. Like, could you imagine that franchise? You can run Curry off as a two guard, like a Conley, Curry backcourt. And then at that point in time, you have Gasol. You even had Zach Randolph a couple of years ago as well. Or even last year, you had Zach Randolph. That the entire organizational structure would be different. Like, that's really the damning date. June 25th, 2009. I mean, look at the guys after Thabeet. Harden. Steph Curry, DeMar DeRozan, even with all his fault, right? Even Jeff Teague, damn it.
Yeah, or Drew. I mean, Drew Holiday.
Yeah. Taj Gibson. I mean, it doesn't matter. Like,
yeah.
Basically everyone would have been a major, major upgrade. Oof. So it's interesting just how this sucky draft history how that's played a part in Memphis just kind of going far but not far enough to really be a player, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it goes to show, like, if you have one top five pick and you miss on that, it can be a devastating setback. Like, the Sixers had that with Evan Turner in 2010 too. Like, if you're going to rebuild through the draft, you almost need a multiple year streak where you get at least two or three top five, top 10 picks. So you know, the draft isn't in perfect science. No one's going to say that they're going to hit 100% on it. So if you miss on one, it's not the end of the world if you have multiple picks. But if you miss on the number two pick and you go back to being in the 20s from there on out, like, there goes your young talent. Like, this was always the likely outcome. The grit and grind, like, the people in Memphis are so fiercely loyal to the grit and grind core that if they tried to break them up any earlier than they did, I think there would have been a riot on Beale Street. That said, now they're all in their 30s. You know, Z-Bo and Tony Allen are gone. Gasol's 32, Conley's 30, and he's been dealing with all sorts of lower body injuries. So, again, I'm going to go through their schedule quickly before I ask you this next question. We're recording this on Friday. They have a home game against San Antonio tonight. They're at Cleveland on the second night of a back-to-back tomorrow. Home against Minnesota Monday, at the Knicks Wednesday. Home against Toronto next Friday. Back-to-back against OKC next Saturday. Then home against Miami, road against Washington. It starts to soften up a little bit after that. They do Hawks, Celtics, at Warriors, and then toward the end of the month, it's at Phoenix, Clippers, at Phoenix, at Lakers, and then Warriors, which is a loss, and then the Kings. So end of the month gets a little softer, but, like, there is a non-zero chance that they are 8-20 when they come out of this stretch. Like, they might just be so far gone from the playoff race by mid-December, you know, there's no coming back. So if that's the case, what do they do? Do they stick with the Conley, Gasol, Parsons trio? At this point, Parsons is not tradable unless you're attaching an asset with him. Like no one is willingly taking that contract as a thing of value. Gasol is probably your highest value trade chip at the moment, just because of Conley's injuries and the fact he's signed to a big deal for longer. You know, Gasol's contract can expire in 2019, so you're not necessarily bound to him forever. He's also on the cheapest deal of the three, I believe. Is it time for them to at least consider shopping Gasol? Or, you know, Matt Moore of CBS Sports, he's a Memphis guy. Like, he's in Denver, but the Grizzlies are his team, and he's been having this debate on Twitter for the last couple days and has kind of been saying, like, they're a small market team. Like, they're not going to get free agent interest. They're not. LeBron James is not going to be calling them this summer and wanting a meeting with them, especially after they did Fizdale dirty. But, you know, they're not going to get that caliber of player. So with that in mind, like, what do they do here?
Well, there's only one way you can get that sort of player if you're not a free agent destination, and that's through the draft. But as history shows, even when being presented with very high draft picks, they seem to beat it up.
It's a good verb.
Yeah, so regarding Gasol, he's going to be 33 in January. I want to say that they should go through a retooling process, but that's kicking the can down the road, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if you could, and I think they could, I do think they could get out of Chandler Parsons' contract, but then Matt Moore's point comes in, like, why would you want to clear cap space?
Right.
Like, what are you clearing cap space for? That's not going to work. The only way that you, if you're a small market team, here's the formula. The way to get attractive is to at least establish your core with a couple of young guys who seem to be franchise altering talents.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can be a player, because then you don't do the recruiting, the young stars do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge take. And I wrote a piece a couple of years ago for FanRag as well, saying that you have to use your cap space if you have like a bunch of young kids on your roster on rookie deals. Because it's just ridiculous to use up your cap space just by re-signing them. Like, use it up and then pay the effing money that you get, the luxury tax or whatever. Because if you get a star attached to like three or four young guys who can be major difference makers, well, hey, conference finals could be right around the corner.
Right.
And I still believe that's the smartest strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But I also get trading Gasol and considering trading Mike Conley. I mean, that's removing the heart. That is, I think that would put them into a tailspin culture-wise. And I think that's what they fear. And I completely understand that fear. Seeing a team, again, just bringing up the Bulls because they're the perfect example of misfits and organizational culture that's gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what happened after Thibodeau was fired. There is no, like, if you, I ask you right now, what do the Bulls build on right now? You can say insanity and you'd be right. And like, that's it. Like, what do they build on? What are they known as?
Yeah.
What's their culture? But Memphis, you don't raise that question because you know damn well what that culture is. It is, we are going to tough it out.
Mm-hmm.
My leg might have fallen off, literally, but I am going to get 10 rebounds more because that's what I need to do.
Yeah.
That's the mentality, and that's why fans are coming along, and that's why they have major support. Moving those two would be the clever thing to do from a long-term perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But they would lose fan interest. They would lose money. It would just be a long, hard process. And they would lose that culture that they would then need to put a lot of energy in reestablishing. So that's what you have to figure out. How do we move along while maintaining our culture? If that culture can be upheld without Gasol and without Conley, you move them for the best package you can get, but can that culture be upheld without those guys?
Right. Like, who are their building blocks that are young? Like Dylan Brooks?
Dylan.
They don't have anyone.
Oh, that's
anyone.
So bad.
Yeah, like that's I mean, that goes back to how they've messed up the draft. I mean, I guess Deonta right. Davis maybe. Like,
I mean, Deonta, Kobe Simmons to some extent. Ivan Rapp, who's played like 1 minute.
Yeah.
Has he been injured? Do you know that? I haven't really read up on Rapp lately, though. Has he been injured?
He has a little medical sign next to him on Spotrac that I'm looking at right now. So I'm assuming
okay.
yes.
Yeah, because that just does not make sense.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. Okay.
I think that's ultimately the question more. Like, can they save this culture? Like, the grit and grind is Memphis's identity, as you said. Mm-hmm. Like, and Memphis as a city has embraced that mentality. Like, Memphis wants to be a blue collar scrappy city. They fell in love with this Grizzlies team because of Tony Allen, Zebo, Conley, Gasol. Now two of those guys are gone. If you get rid of Gasol, you know, as you said, I really think Memphis fans would check out. Like, I, you know, my college roommate is born and raised in Memphis, lives there now. Like, he loves this Grizzlies team. He loves that core. My wife is a first-year resident at Vanderbilt, so we're about 3 hours from Memphis. One of her co-residents is born and raised in Memphis, comes here. I had to break the news to her that Zach Randolph got traded, and she was devastated. So Monday, she sees my wife in the hospital. She's coming off of, like, a 16-hour shift, and the first thing she says is that, A, she's dying, and B, she's sad about Fizdale. Like, Memphis people are very loyal to their current core. So,
yeah,
I think it's an easier decision for the Clippers, who we'll talk about in a minute. I honestly don't know. I mean, I guess it just depends on what you can get for Gasol. If you can, you know, but I think before the season started, I want to say it was Chris Mannix of The Vertical who mentioned Boston as a possible Gasol landing spot. And the Grizzlies, I believe, owe a top 7 protected first round pick in 2019 to Boston, which, if you trade Gasol, is now, you know, now you're looking like it might be in that area of mid lottery, even high lottery. Maybe they keep that pick anyway. But, you know, if you can get Boston on the phone, you know, they're not giving up Jason Tatum, but if you can get Jaylen Brown, plus, I don't know what else, you know, whatever it makes the salaries work out. But if you could get a young blue chipper, you can get a pick back.
Mm.
That's at least worth considering. I wouldn't do it just to get Gasol off the books. But
No.
But you're also running the risk. Like, if he leaves in free agency in 2019, I mean, you're looking at a multi-year rebuild anyway. And then at that point, people are going to ask, well, what the hell? Why didn't you trade him when you could? Why didn't you get something for him?
I feel we had that exact conversation last week regarding the Clippers.
Yeah.
Like, exactly the same. It's a very similar spot.
Right. So I guess our verdict for the Grizzlies is this is a really hard decision. And I think is it safe to say we're both open to at least hearing offers on Gasol?
Oh, but yeah. No, I'm taking offers like from a year ago.
Yeah.
Whenever a guy turns 30, you take offers.
Yeah.
You listen. Unless that dude is LeBron James or Michael Jordan, you listen.
Right. But
I mean,
we're not rushing to trade him given what he means to the franchise.
I will say this, though. I know that it doesn't matter as much in terms of clearing cap space, but I would probably still see if I could move Chandler Parsons.
Mm-hmm.
And even if I had to add something to the mix, like,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what, though, because when I look at the young players, we just talked about it. Like, even if you offer like the best youngster you have right now, who's Dylan Brooks, like, do you, as a team, is that enough? No. So you know what? My idea just drops dead right now because they don't have anything to attach. That would have been a first round pick, but they're certainly not going to give up that now.
What you could do is what Eric Pincus proposed with Luol Deng as well. You can give him a 3-year extension with only like a very small fraction guaranteed, and then stretch him, and you can put that over 11 years. So you're paying him probably
$3.3 million.
Yeah. So you're, well, I guess because Parsons, it'll be even more. So you're probably paying him $4 to $5 million. Right.
Yeah, for the next, that's true.
You know, for the next 11 years. So as we laughed about a couple weeks ago, like in 2027, the Grizzlies fans are going to check the cap sheet and be like, who the hell is this Chandler Parsons? Why is he still getting $5 million from us? But,
I forgot that, he signed a max.
Yeah, that's true. Sure did. Yeah. But again, it's like, what are you going to use that cap space on?
Look, I just want to say that I'm white. I also have very bad knees, Brian. I have aches all over.
If they want you for a max contract, or
right, you'll just, I can't contribute.
$5 million a year? That seems fair.
Yeah, I can't contribute 30 minutes at night, Brian. I mean, I fit the qualification. Come on, I'm old.
I think so. I hope Chris Wallace of the Grizzlies is listening.
I'm just saying, I'm right here. Just, and I won't even need a max, just a little less than a max. Yeah. Not taking a minimum because my ego would get bruised.
Sure. Yeah. That's
no. Reasonable. Okay. All right. So I was sitting here thinking, and I came up with an idea, and then I dropped it again because I forgot that Zach LaVine is going to be a free agent this summer, a restricted free agent though, but. I was thinking about some sort of salary dump where Memphis gave up Parsons and a 2018 pick, actually, for Zach LaVine and a bunch of Chicago's youngsters.
They wouldn't be able to because they owe the 2019 pick to Boston. So the earliest they could trade is 2021 unless they owe any other picks, which I'm going to look up right now.
Yeah, I thought they didn't. They didn't get that one from Miami. Right. They can't. Okay.
Yeah. They've got a second rounder coming from Phoenix and from Charlotte or Miami. Nope.
Oh, yeah, they've just really handcuffed themselves then.
Yeah. So the earliest they can trade is a protected or a you know, the 2 years after the Boston pick. So
okay. Yeah.
I mean, 2021 at the earliest. It could be 2023.
Yep. The Stepien rule at play. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's fine. Then my idea is definitely invalid. But I thought like a youngster like Zach LaVine, I know he's not the grinding type, but if you could get a guy in there like him who could, you know, average 20 in his sleep, it might help prolong the whole Conley Gasol ideology that they have going on.
Well, you just actually gave me an idea. So going down, I'm going to make sure this is cap legal before I say it, but going down the road of soon to be restricted free agents.
Yeah. Who you got?
Let me make sure it's allowed. Mm-hmm. We got him. We got him. Let's see if, I mean, we can, oh, it does work. What if you did, the Bucks are on the phone. Mm-hmm. They offered John Henson and Jabari Parker.
Oh, that damn injury.
Yeah. But Jabari,
I'm intrigued.
He's like, he is the type of, you know, the blue chipper who you ideally want.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. But so what do you give up? What's the full trade? Give me the full trade.
That alone works cap wise.
Yeah.
If, you know, I guess you could throw in Rashad Vaughn since he's going to be gone at the end of the year anyway. Doesn't.
No, but you're saying for Parsons and what exactly?
No, I'm saying for Gasol.
Oh, you're saying for Gasol. Okay, yeah. So it's a Gasol trade. Okay, I thought it was like Parsons and future picks. Like, oh, you no, wanted no. to get something. Okay. No, no, no. Because that's like kind of like Milwaukee, would they even take on dead money at this point? I'm not sure they would, because, you know, Giannis is hitting his stride and everything. Gasol, okay, Gasol for, yeah, on Milwaukee. I move Jabari for that. I also move John Henson for that. I would feel a little bit concerned, because if Jabari's injury turned out to be okay, mm-hmm. and he's still racking up 20 points a night and 7 or 8 rebounds and just being his crazy ass self, I would look pretty bad in 3 years.
Right.
Maybe even 2. Ah, this is a good one. Because, I mean, Gasol is going to be 33. He's 33 right around the corner. And if you go from 30, when you go from 33 to 34, you usually have a pretty big drop off. Like, that's where your prime is really, you know, that's, it's dead at that point, and you're regressing significantly. And Giannis is just too damn young. You know what? I would have said yes if Giannis had been 27.
Interesting. So you wouldn't do it from Milwaukee's end. Do you think it's enough?
Not now.
For Memphis?
Yeah. 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 I think it is. At this point in time, if they're open to everything, yeah, I think it is. And if they have the medical reports from Milwaukee on Jabari and they're encouraging, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. We don't know jack shit about Jabari's knee right now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that definitely complicates matters. That just... Mm-hmm. That's kind of the thought experiment I wanted to go for. Like, what type of thing should Memphis be after? I think, I'm sure Memphis would want a pick thrown in there as well. I believe, let me double check here. Milwaukee, I believe, owes a pick already. Yeah, they owe their first rounder. Oh, the super protected one they sent in the Bledsoe trade. So, again, it like they could offer a 2020, a protected 2020 first round pick to Memphis in that deal. Most likely it wouldn't convey until 2022, it looks like. Realistically it probably wouldn't convey for 4+ years, but that might be, you know, at this point, that might be how long Memphis needs to be looking ahead. Like, this thing's going to go south at some point. So it's just a matter of figuring out when.
How about this? this is a little bit, there's some nostalgia played into all this.
Okay.
I'll admit as much. So a deal with the Spurs involving Mike Conley, and he shipped off for, let's see, Dejounte Murray, obviously, for the point guard of the future thing, and Pau Gasol. So you at least, you play out the Gasol thing, because they're old. Mm-hmm. Conley's still young enough to be a major difference maker for the Spurs specifically. So you say goodbye to Mike in a way like, you know, go ahead, go get your final prime years with a team that's going somewhere. And you look at Gasol and you go, you know what? We're going to get your brother here. He's older than dirt, but that doesn't matter, because we're just going to ride you guys into the sunset together. Gasol bros for life. I don't know. Something like that. And then you have Dejounte Murray, maybe even a couple more youngsters like Derek White, maybe. And then you have those guys waiting in line.
If I'm the Grizzlies, I say no to that. I don't think that's
From a talent perspective, I get that. Yeah. I mean, I would too, but it just might be a nice send-off for Mike. Like, to put him in a position where he can just be absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Also, I don't even know. They would have to include more, I think, because Mike's getting 28.5 this year. Pau's only getting 16. So, I think they would have to do
Pau
plus Patty Mills. Yeah.
And
I'm not doing that for Mike Conley.
No.
Yeah. It's, I mean,
no, here's the thing. Who else is out there? Because the point guard market is, you know, it's a point guard driven league. The league is stocked with point guards. Like, who is in a position to make a trade for a point guard earning that much money?
Right.
who could win something.
That exists. I mean, I guess aside from the Bulls, unless they need a seventh point guard of the future, but I don't know why you're trading for a 30-year-old Mike Conley when you're this
exactly
early into a rebuild. So I
I'm talking about playoff team specifically.
Yeah, I don't think they're at least. I mean, I guess the Clippers maybe just because they're so ravaged by injury.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's where we go next. Like, let's go right into the Clippers.
Indiana though.
Who would they trade?
Yeah, I'm looking. It's there isn't someone there. Like Sabonis would have to be a big deal. TJ Leaf would have to be involved.
Like that,
but like you're right.
Thad Young and Bogdanovich. Oh, I guess you'll include Darren Collison. You could probably do Collison or Thad Young and Collison plus a prospect. Yeah, TJ Leaf.
But that's still crap though.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're right. Let's go to the Clippers because this Memphis situation isn't resolving itself.
It sure isn't. Clippers, you know, we talked about them last episode, I believe, because Patrick Beverley was out for the year. Milos Teodosic remains out with a plantar fascia injury. Gallinari's missed the last 10 or so games with a glute strain. Now Blake Griffin on, I believe it was Monday night against the Lakers. Austin Rivers rolls up on his left knee, causes him to sprain his MCL. He's out for the next up to 8 weeks. So they played Thursday night in their first game without him. The Jazz, who did not have Rudy Gobert, Joe Johnson, or Rodney Hood, beat the pants off of them, 126-107. The Clippers are now 8-12. They started the year 4-0. They then proceeded to lose 11 of their next 12 games. They won 3 games against Atlanta, Sacramento, and the Lakers. Then they lost against Utah. Their upcoming schedule at Dallas, home and home against Minnesota, homes against Washington and Toronto, 4-game road trip at Orlando, at Washington, at Miami, at San Antonio. So much like the Grizzlies, by the time Blake Griffin's back, they might be completely out of the playoff race. We talked last episode about, you know, whether it was time for them to tank. Should they, you know, be shopping Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan? You came up with what I thought was a really smart idea of flipping Blake Griffin and Paul George, you know, making salaries balance however you can. I think that window has closed now that he's hurt. I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, because I said it. So
yeah,
of course
right.
It happened.
Right,
yeah.
Naturally. I mean, if Griffin's back on the early end of his recovery timetable and if OKC continues to struggle, especially in crunch time, maybe that's revisited closer to the trade deadline. But for now, we have to put the kibosh on Blake Griffin trade ideas. So let's talk DeAndre Jordan today, because he can opt out of his contract at the end of this year. He has, I think, just over $24 million player option for 2018-19. They were having extension talks with him earlier in the fall, but they did not reach an extension. He was eligible for about a starting salary next year, just north of $27 million if he signed an extension, 120% of his salary this year. If he's a free agent next year, he will be eligible for the 10-year max, which, assuming the salary cap of $101 million, is $35.4 million. So he could get a 5-year max deal north of $200 million if he finds a team willing to offer that to him. If you're the Clippers... What are you doing with DeAndre? Are you silently shopping him? Are you having a fire sale? Or are you...
Silently? I'm yelling from the goddamn rooftops. I'm putting the Batman signal up there, and I'm replacing it with dreadlocks.
Okay, so you have no interest, if you're the Clippers, in re-signing him next summer.
I would rather have another unnecessary year of Gar Foreman leading my team than I would have DeAndre Jordan on a 4 or 5 year max.
Yeah, that's fair. I you know, you would think if he was willing to sign for substantially less than the max, those extension talks probably would have gotten a little further than they did. Further complicating matters, right now he doesn't have an agent, so he was representing himself in those extension negotiations. So he might not have a good sense of what's about to happen in free agency. One team executive called it, quote, nuclear winter when he was speaking to Bobby Marks and Tim McMahon of ESPN earlier this summer. Basically, teams don't have cap space. So there's going to be a bunch of, like, top-tier guys. Mm-hmm. Those guys are all going to get, you know, LeBron's going to get a max wherever he wants it. Paul George is probably getting a max wherever he wants it. Chris Paul is probably getting a max. He's probably staying in Houston, considering how well they're playing, but, you know, he's going to get a max. After that, cap space dries up quickly. So you're either going to a crappy team like Chicago, Atlanta, Phoenix, where you have no realistic path toward title contention. The Sixers are going to have cap space, so that's, you know, that's one big name free agent if they want it. Or they can save their space for 2019, re-sign J.J. Redick and, you know, whoever to a one-year deal. Basically, like, DeAndre Jordan might not be able to get a max deal that he's expecting. So maybe that's the Clippers' play. They can see that better than he can, and maybe they think, like, yeah, all right, cool. We'll let you hit free agency. Come back to us when you realize that you're not getting $200-plus million. We still have
the ability. Yeah, they're going to Nerlens him.
Yeah, like, we still have the ability to offer you an extra year and higher raises because we have your bird rights. So that, I mean, that's a possibility for the Clippers. Yep. But the other, David Aldridge of NBA.com reported they've already been shopping him around the league. Zach Lowe earlier this year said they listened to trade offers at the right around the NBA draft. They clearly didn't make a move. So Aldridge floated four teams in particular that I think I want to go into briefly, because I want to ask you, where's your, like, breaking point? Like, which prospects or players or picks would you not trade for DeAndre Jordan? So let's let's start with Cleveland. Joe Vardon of Cleveland.com says they would be willing to do Tristan Thompson for DeAndre. I don't think that's enough for the Clippers. If it is, if that's straight up enough for the Clippers,
I do that. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you include the Brooklyn pick?
No. No, God, no. No. I mean, insert Michael Scott from The Office GIF here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I believe I saw this last night that Shumpert is out for a while, right? I think he's now
getting 8 weeks or something like that.
6 to 8 weeks. So, you know, he always gets floated around as a trade piece as well. I don't think I don't think he's gonna have as much value as, you know, as he once did. So, all right, so that's the deal breaker, the Brooklyn pick. If you're the Clippers, would you do it if Cleveland included its own pick? So Tristan for DeAndre plus Cleveland's pick, which is going to be in the late first round.
How much does Tristan have left on his deal? He had that horrible $80 million deal that he signed two summers ago, right?
Yeah, so it looks like he has 3 years left, no player option.
Okay.
So it's 16.4 this year, about 17.5 next year, and then 18.5 in 2019-2020.
No, I don't. You know what? I don't. I let DeAndre walk unless I get a significant difference maker in return. I'm not that high on Tristan Thompson. I think he's drastically overrated, which a lot of people become when playing alongside LeBron James.
Yeah. I don't know how the fit between him and Blake Griffin would be. That would give me serious concern. So I
mean, if Tristan was, like, a legitimate shot blocker,
right,
that would be a thing, but he's not. Like, he's a decent rim protector. He's a good defender overall, like, positional defender.
Yep.
But you have that element right now of people fearing DeAndre as a shot blocker, even though he's got pretty low numbers this year, but disregard that for a second. Like, you think twice before you enter the lane. With Tristan, No, you flip that shut up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So no on Cleveland. If you're not willing to trade the Nets pick, it's probably a non-starter.
Right.
Let's go to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Would you trade Kelly Oubre
nope.
in a package?
Nope.
What if you can get off of Ion Mahinmi's contract?
Still no.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. So I think, you know, if it was Gortat and Kelly Oubre, I agree. I wouldn't do it. Just a lot, you know, part of the value in getting DeAndre is you get his bird rights. You can go over the cap to re-sign him. Washington is capped out forever now with Wall, Beal, and Porter all on max deals. So getting a guy like DeAndre, getting his bird rights, being able to go over the cap to re-sign him, there's more value there than, you know, a team with cap space. So if it was Mahinmi and Oubre, I would have to at least consider it. I agree, Gortat and Oubre for DeAndre I would not do. I think, I really like Oubre. I'm going to talk about him a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
But that Mahinmi contract is horrendous.
It is. But they need, like, a youngster who is actually turning a profit right now.
Yeah.
We saw the slow start of the Otto Porter's career. We have no idea what Kelly Oubre can be.
That's true.
What if he is the second coming of Otto Porter, and this year is just the preview? Mm-hmm. What if he arrives next year?
That means shit.
And if he's
arriving this year.
Yeah, no, but like in a larger sense.
Yeah.
Then he's the three. You slide Otto to the four. Mm-hmm. Welcome, big four, Brian.
Yeah.
I'm not giving up that for DeAndre Jordan. It needs to be said, though, I'm not a fan of DeAndre's game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe in non-shooting bigs anymore.
Yeah.
You need to be able to stretch the court. And also, I think he's been a drastically overrated defensive player. Like, when Doc started the whole defensive player of the year discussion, mm-hmm. and you had certain writers going in on it, no. That was ridiculous from the day one.
Yeah, that was atrocious.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to, well, I guess to summarize, you would not do a deal if it involves Oubre at all. I would at least consider it if it was for Mahinmi and Oubre. I would not do it if it was Gortat and Oubre. Let's go to Milwaukee. Yep. Malcolm Brogdon, would you include him in a DeAndre deal?
Nope.
Really?
Yep.
No matter what?
Nope.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. I mean, the problem with Milwaukee is that it's tough to find a workable deal. You would give up Henson just because he's got, you know, $11.4 million this year. DeAndre's going to replace him in the starting lineup. Brogdon gets you another. Brogdon just being on a small contract, that doesn't help. So you can't do it just those two guys for DeAndre. You need another $6.6 million. So you'd either have to do Jabari, which I don't think you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Delly, which maybe the Clippers would do just because they're so desperate for point guards right now. Or Mirza Teletovic. But I don't know if that's moving the needle for the Clippers.
No, I mean, the Clippers would decline a deal centered around Mirza and Teletovic, but like that's what I would give up. Yeah. I'm not giving up any big piece. I'm not even giving up Tony Snell.
Yeah.
What's the attraction here? You have Giannis. He's fantastic, and he's getting to the paint at will. I mean, despite not having a jump shot, he still can manufacture something. But if you get DeAndre in there, you just make life harder for Giannis. You mm-hmm. block that lane significantly more. Like, what's the benefit here? Just overall, before you mention the last team, how does DeAndre Jordan help you as a basketball team?
I mean, he's an incredible rebounder, even now.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's number two in the league, trailing only DeAndre Jordan in terms of rebounds. The concern
is trailing himself?
Huh?
He's trailing himself?
No, Andre Drummond. Oh, did I say DeAndre
Jordan? Oh, okay.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
The concern of mine with him is the shot blocking numbers.
Right.
Because he's gone down. 2 years ago, he averaged 2.3. He had three seasons of above 2. Last year, he was at 1.7. This mm-hmm. year, only 1.1.
Yep.
That's a concern. Like, if he's not protecting the rim, I don't give a damn if he's pulling down 14 rebounds a game, because I have Giannis, I have Bledsoe, I have Middleton. All of those guys are good rebounders. I don't need a guy, you know, as you said, like, I don't need a guy clogging up my spacing who can't shoot an open jumper outside of 5 feet, who is a liability at the free throw line. Like, he's shooting a career high 60.4% this year, but he's taken 53 attempts. Like, that does not feel like an Andre Drummond thing where he actually improved. It feels like that's some small sample size that's about to revert pretty quickly. Like, he went, I think, 2 of 5 from the line Thursday night against the Jazz. That's coming down. So,
additionally, he's at near 20,000 minutes. Or, well, okay, he broke 19,000 this year.
Mm-hmm.
But he's taking,
with the playoffs, over 20.
Oh, that's true. But I was looking just at the regular season. Yeah. He's taking exactly 3,800 shots. When you're getting paid that much money and you're playing that much on the floor, which is over 30 minutes a night, you need to be able to contribute in some capacity on both ends. Mm-hmm. Being just the setup guy, or not the setup, being the guy who's being set up, or being the garbage man, yeah, that has value off the bench. Like, I'm just not seeing what kind of benefit. It seems like we're all hating on offensive-minded big men. Like, you know, Greg Monroe, people crapped on him for I don't know how long. Al Jefferson, oh, can't defend. He's coming off the bench because he can only score. Well, let's flip it around.
Mm-hmm.
Guys who can only defend, and let's be honest with DeAndre's case, not even that well, aren't they a liability?
Yeah. I mean,
all right, then.
Yeah. I think, like, I wouldn't be unwilling. Like, Malcolm Brogdon is not a I'm hanging up if you inquire about him type of player. Like, I would not be unwilling to move him. But I agree, unless if the Clippers were willing to take back Dele, I think then it starts to get a little interesting, because you can just get off of that contract. But I agree that it's not like a home run. I mean, I just, you know, that starting five would be preposterous. But I kind of like what the Bucks have going right now. Like, we haven't talked about them. We will probably next episode. We should,
yeah.
I mean, since Bledsoe's come over, they've got something really interesting going, and having Brogdon come off the bench once Jabari comes back. You know, I'm assuming they're going to bring him off the bench at least at first. Like, that might be a really well-balanced top seven. So, I don't know. You know, I think the Bledsoe thing was their move this year. I don't know if you want to rock the boat any more than that. Maybe you do. I don't know. But
it's a tricky one. Yeah. I wouldn't. I probably wouldn't.
I think they're playing so well already. I mean, they pasted the Blazers on Thursday, and the Blazers are a pretty good team. Like,
yeah,
they're, you know, Milwaukee looks good as is. I don't know that you need to continue shaking things up to that extent.
Well, and speaking about DeAndre specifically, in terms of shaking a roster up by inquiring him, you know, there are 12 teams in the NBA this year that are averaging more than 33-point field goal attempts per night. Like, the league as a whole is averaging 28.9 shots from behind the arc per game. DeAndre Jordan just does not fit into that picture anywhere if you want to win. Like, you can't play winning basketball anymore and have two guys in the starting lineup who play big minutes and who can't stretch the court. It's just not feasible.
Yeah.
Look, even the Pelicans, DeMarcus Cousins is out there draining triples, right. And Anthony Davis as well. I mean, he too can stretch, you know? I'm not seeing the market, but I know there's a fourth team, so go ahead and mention the Raptors. Yep. Spoiler alert.
So,
yeah.
You gotta figure Jonas Valanciunas, since they hate him, would be the centerpiece.
Yeah. I want Jonas to get the hell out of Dodge.
Like, yeah. So, yeah. you can't do it. You're 150,000 short if you just do Jonas and Bruno Caboclo. So would you include, take your pick, Norman Powell, OG?
No, no.
Dylan Wright?
Yeah, probably.
Fred VanVleet?
Yeah, one of those two guys.
Yeah.
Wright, VanVleet, maybe.
Like, yeah. I think that that's probably the most interesting of the four in terms of, like, which team would be most willing to do it not on the Clippers end. Like, which of the four other teams would be, would be willing to try it. But, I mean, do you want, like, it seems like they've been using Serge Ibaka more at the five. If you have DeAndre Jordan, that goes, you know, you put that back in the shed. Like, that's gone.
Is that a bad thing?
That's another fair question. I don't feel
Serge Ibaka has really been all that good this year, or, you know, that may just be me, but he's not been worth the money that he's getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
This dude is, and he's averaging less than 27 minutes a night, and he's primarily taking outside shots, just spotting up. I mean, I hope he steps up in the playoffs because he needs to show me something.
Yeah. It's, I feel like the Raptors, if only because of the age of their core of Lowry, of DeRozan, of Ibaka, acquiring Jordan is mostly a win now move.
Yeah.
So if you can do it, see how far this gets you. You have the freedom after that, after this year, to cut bait on Jordan if you want to. Lowry and Ibaka, I believe, would only be signed for 2 more years each after that. So you're not tied down, you know, forever in this core. I think there's something there. If I'm the Clippers, you know, I'm starting to look. I would first survey the other three teams, because I would rather have the Brooklyn pick from Cleveland. I would rather have Oubre than anything. I would, you know, rather than have Jonas, or I guess if the Raptors were willing to include Norman Powell, I'd be interested. But, like, you know, Caboclo and DeLon Wright are not shaking things up for me to the extent that I'm really excited about trading one of my core pieces.
No, but just because it's your core piece doesn't mean it's a good core piece.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I mean, that's just... I'm just going to try a trade here. That one failed because Jordan is earning too much. But that deal centered around... I'm going back to these guys. The Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jordan to the Bulls for a package that involves Zach LaVine and maybe Nikola Mirotic, because you can get out of that deal immediately, almost, like,
or Robin this Lopez. Year.
Or Robin Lopez, something like that. And then the Clippers pick. I don't know. I need to restructure this one in
that's
my head.
That's interesting. You really don't want Zach LaVine, huh?
It's not that. I'm just, when I was doing a podcast last weekend, over at Bulls HQ. And it wasn't really a Bulls podcast, but we started talking about the draft specifically. It was a draft-oriented podcast. And I got it in my head because, you know, we were talking slightly about the Bulls in effect of this. And I started saying, you know what? If this team was ever going to reel me back in, getting a second lottery pick for the 2018 draft,
yeah,
that would probably be the team's best chance, because that would I would even give up like a future pick for it. I think this draft is so good, even especially in the top five, that if the Bulls won the lottery and got like Luka Doncic, I would give up virtually everything else outside of Doncic and Lauri Markkanen for the second pick, so they can get DeAndre Ayton. And I don't care if by the end of draft night you only have three players on your roster. If that's DeAndre Ayton, Lauri Markkanen, and Luka Doncic, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I was thinking, like, why would the Bulls trade Zach LaVine for a guy who's probably going to leave at the end of the year? I don't see why DeAndre Jordan would have any incentives to stay with the Bulls, but if you get the Clippers
pick, that's part of it. Yeah. He should leave. They're trading for him as an expiring deal.
Yeah.
He's not going to offer wins. I mean, come on, look at that team.
Right, the Bulls are condemned to mediocrity no matter who
exactly.
They get.
And then you just play around. Like, if you're Fred Hoiberg, you tell DeAndre, you know what? If you want to, take a three.
Yeah.
Take two. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. So I'm going to sum it up just like I did with the Gasol stuff. Unlike with Gasol, both of us are firmly in the trade DeAndre Jordan for whatever you can get camp, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's weird. It's like, it's strange that both of these teams are kind of at this crossroads, but the fact that DeAndre is an expiring contract really factors in here. Also, you know, when they lost Chris Paul, that era of Clippers basketball died. Like, I know you've got Blake and DeAndre still, but this team, we were hopeful. Mm-hmm. Like, they came out hot. They won their first four games, but look who they beat in retrospect. You know, they beat the Lakers, the Suns, the Jazz, the Portland on the road is impressive, but like, they got absolutely pasted by the Warriors. I just don't think it's going to happen with this core, no matter what type of retooling you do. And it comes down to the same thing it did with Memphis. Like, you screwed up the draft for a decade. After a while, like, if you're not replenishing your young talent pipeline, it's going to bite you in the ass at some point. Like, I wrote.
No, they don't have a young talent pipeline. They're just not using it. Like,
yeah,
again,
right.
I've mentioned this three times over the past few weeks. Why is Sam Dekker, Montrezl Harrell, Bryce Johnson not playing?
Right. They finally got minutes on Thursday because everyone else is injured. But until then, they had not gotten the minutes they should be playing. And I wrote a thing about this whole decision on B-Ball Breakdown. And the Clippers, even if they do trade Jordan, it's not like they have to do a Sixers thing, go through a whole, you know, four-year tanking. Like, they have more talent on their roster now than the Sixers did when they started. Like, the Sixers had no choice because they traded for Andrew Bynum. It blew up. They lost a lot of assets. The Clippers have pissed away draft picks left and right over the past decade or so.
Man, they are very similar to Memphis, huh?
Yeah. I mean, this whole thing is just... Yeah. If you're going to build around the big three, you need to keep hitting on draft picks. And it's hard because you're getting picks in the 20s or you're getting second round picks. But like,
look at the Spurs are laughing right now.
Yeah, but then look at the Warriors too. Like, Jordan Bell is going to, sorry to say his name, but
I loved it. I love what he's doing. I love it.
That just prolonged the chances of that franchise becoming a dynasty.
Absolutely.
Like,
just imagine in 1996, I believe it was 96, or no, 95 actually, the Bulls passed over Michael Finley to take Jason Caffey. Like, if that they had hit on Michael Finley,
yeah,
there's no telling. They Jordan might have returned for the 99 season. We might be talking about seven rings instead of six.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's like, it goes to show that even when you have, like, Miami had this problem too during their big three era. They stopped valuing youth. They went to a bunch of 30-somethings. Those 30-somethings aged out. Miami had nothing to build around once.
Shabazz Napier, man.
Right. Who's actually playing well, as we mentioned last episode, but
yeah,
not in Miami. You know, the Spurs are the rare organization where it doesn't matter who they pick or where they pick them, they just turn them into good NBA players. But again, Cleveland's going through this now. Like, Kyle Korver is one of their big pieces. Like, what young talent on that roster? If LeBron James leaves next year, Kay Felder? Like, that's not...
Kay Felder's on the Bulls.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, my God. So, yeah, who, like, the Cavs have very little to no young talent.
So I'm going to show my age once more in this podcast. Back when the Blazers were loaded. They had Scottie Pippen, Rasheed Wallace, Arvydas Sabonis, you know, all those guys, Steve Smith,
mm-hmm.
Damon Stoudemire. They also had Bonzi Wells,
mm-hmm.
or Bonzi Wells.
Mm-hmm.
And their logic was, let's all give Bonzi our strengths.
Mm.
It didn't work out, but he apparently became a hell of a lot better than he ever should have been because he was able to learn from these fantastic legends.
Mm-hmm.
I also, Detlef Schrempf was on there as well. Why have we not seen Cleveland specifically just find a guy who has all the physical tools? You can find that in the D-League, and you can find someone who's young, like 20, 21.
Mm-hmm.
Bring him up to the top squad. Have him practice with LeBron. Have him practice with Dwayne Wade, Kyle Korver, whoever. And you just mold his ass.
Yeah.
In the image of all these guys. He may not become, like, you know, the rich man's version of every one of them, but he might become a decent rotation player who, down the line, could then become an asset. Like, mm-hmm. it blows my mind that we're not seeing teams who are veteran heavy go for like these low gamble youngsters and then just have them fucking stick to all the great stars that they have on their teams,
mm-hmm.
to just let them soak up every bit of knowledge and skill that they can add.
Yeah. It's a fair point. I don't know.
No. Oh. Well, we're seeing it somewhat in Philly now.
Yeah.
I mean, or actually under Hinge, because I mean with Robert Covington, like,
yeah.
nobody knew he would be this good. He didn't have obviously like a LeBron next to him.
Right.
But like there's logic in gambling with young players.
Right. Absolutely. And damn it, Morton, you were trying to troll me into going on to my Hinky rant now, weren't you? Oh. All right, so let's just address it right off the bat. And we'll go into the
I'm just going to unplug. I'm going to unplug for 20 minutes, and I'm just going to have myself a sandwich or something.
Good. So this is going to be about... We'll talk about Okafor in a second, but Adam Silver was on the Washington Philly broadcast the other night, and they asked him just about the process in general. He said, they asked him if he trusts the process. He was like, well, I don't know if I would use that term. But he praised the work that Brian Colangelo and the owners are doing without mentioning Sam Hinkie, which is just, at this point, this reference is probably going to be lost on you, Mort, because you do not watch the NFL. For good reason. But last year, the Patriots basically were at war with NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell because he suspended Tom Brady for 4 games for his alleged involvement in a ball deflating case.
Yeah, Deflategate. I know that about okay. that one, though.
Yep. Yeah. So when the Patriots won the Super Bowl at the end of the year, Roger Goodell had to go hand the trophy to their team owner, Robert Kraft, who just had this gigantic shit-eating grin on his face because he just knew how much it was killing Goodell inside to do that. So not only do I want the Sixers to win now just because it would validate Hinkie, I want them to win now so Adam Silver has to hand the trophy over and Joel Embiid gets on the mic and shouts out Sam Hinkie during the trophy celebration. I know it would kill Adam Silver inside. He is quickly moving up the list of enemies of the process just because of his power and the fact that he forced a Colangelo upon us. He almost declared war Wednesday night. But let's...
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to fight you because I agree with you. Don't get me wrong. That was just... It's weird not to give, you know, credit where credit is due.
Mm-hmm.
But shitting on Silver specifically, after having come off a horrid David Stern final decade where the old man basically did everything wrong, and Silver is, by all accounts, a wonderful, fantastic human being who's mm-hmm. done more socially for the league.
Yep.
I'm willing to let this one slide, Philly fan.
That's fine. Yeah, I like him in general, I just, he should give credit. Like, Hinkie took advantage of a shitty rule, and NBA addressed that. They changed the lottery odds pretty much as a direct response to Hinkie, but it was too late.
I would agree.
Hinkie
took advantage. Hats would have been nice.
Yeah, right. Just call it the Hinkie rule. Call the new lottery odds the Hinkie odds.
The Hinkie rule, and just like tip your cap to Hinkie and say, you bested me, sir, and now I changed the game for you.
Right. Yeah. You took advantage of a perverse set of gifts that if you lose, you're guaranteed to get a top five pick, basically.
Right.
You took advantage of that. Good for you. Let's just address this Okafor stuff, because on Monday, ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski reported in yet another story about what's happening with Okafor. Basically,
which isn't a story,
right? Like,
let's be honest.
That's what's killing me. Like, why do we care at this point? Like, I'm seeing a lot of stuff on Twitter about like how the Sixers are doing him wrong, and I don't disagree. Like, it sucks for him that he's not playing, but when he does play, he's awful. And if he wasn't the number, like, Mario Hezonja is in the same situation in Orlando right now. Where is the free Hezonja hashtags? Like, he was two picks behind Okafor. What's the difference?
Probably the lack of fan engagement. Yeah. They don't have a Joel Embiid or a Ben Simmons to get excited about. So, right. I mean, don't get me wrong, Aaron Gordon is good, but he's not those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably why you're not seeing like a whole lot of fan activity surrounding that team.
So Woj reported that the Sixers first were asking for two first round picks for Okafor, then a first and a solid player. Now all they want is a second round pick. That's like, if it just comes down to they're keeping him on the roster in case, I don't know, maybe a trade comes up between now and February where they can package his contract with Amir Johnson or Jared Bayless. You know, I've seen people out there floating. I think you floated this too, Mort. Like, Okafor plus one of those guys for Nico once he's eligible to be traded on January 15th, I believe.
Correct.
So,
correct.
Like,
a month and 2 weeks.
Yeah, there are deadlines here, or I guess there are restrictions on when certain players can be traded. The first is December 15th for players who signed contracts with new teams, then players who signed contracts with their current teams, January 15th. The Sixers presumably are just keeping him around until those two deadlines to see what they can get for him. The thing that's driving me nuts, though, is like a lot of people are saying, like, they're like praising Okafor. They're like, he came into camp 20 pounds lighter and in shape and healthy. He's a professional athlete. Like, is that implying that he was not in shape the first 2 years? And are we really praising this dude for the number 3 overall pick for getting in shape 3 years into his NBA career?
I mean, we have a tendency to praise everyone even though they've done something bad in recent history. I mean, look, remember week 5 or week 7 or something like that of the Trump presidency, and he went out and said something and everyone was like, oh, he sounds presidential now.
Yeah, like, right.
Every sin he's ever committed was just forgotten because, oh my God, he actually made sense for 2 minutes on national television.
Yeah.
So I get that line of thinking that, why should we now appreciate the fact that Jill gives a damn? When he didn't for 2 years, especially concerning his body. I will say this. It's a tough spot for both the team and Jalil, because I get where both are coming from. The team is pretty upset that he did not show the same level of dedication, that he didn't really put his best effort forward. And now that he finally takes things serious, he's kind of burnt the bridge. That's a bad situation, and it benefits nobody that he stays there. So I'm still going to fault Philly for not moving him or buying him out or doing something. I think it's ridiculous just to keep him on the roster just for the off chance that you find a deal in February, you know, to package him. It's just, don't do it like that, because it also sends a bad message to agents and different players. And it's just, regardless of how, you know, regardless of the facts, And narrative will always drive player opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just agree on that right off the bat. Narrative is everything for players. And if the narrative turns overwhelmingly negative in terms of Jahlil, and players are like, free Jahlil, which we've seen a little bit already, then it's going to hurt the Sixers in the long run.
Yeah.
So it would just be strategically a wise move to just like call up somebody and say, hey, do you have a top 55 protected second rounder?
Right.
We do. Well, you want Jahlil Okafor for that. I know you have an open roster spot. You know what? We will. Okay, cool. Let's call the league office. Done deal.
Yeah. I don't want to absolve Brian Colangelo here, and I hope I should have made that clear right off the bat because, you know, they put him on a plane at the trade deadline last year and did not let him play with the team because they thought they had a deal in place. And it was apparently with Portland, and then Portland traded for Nurkic instead. But, like, they were on the precipice of a deal then. They should, like, if they were really asking for two first-round picks for him, that's ridiculous. Like, that's just overvaluing the ever-living hell out of him. You should have taken what you could have got for him at last year's trade deadline and just, you know, said good riddance. Like, yeah, we're taking 30 cents on the dollar. We're taking pennies on the dollar. I don't care. But the further you let this go, the worse his trade value was going to dip. Like, this was the inevitable outcome if you... I mean, you know, especially after you signed Amir Johnson, you have Rashawn Holmes still on the roster. There just weren't enough minutes for all of these big guys. You got Ben Simmons and Dario at the four. Like, it wasn't going to happen. So, it's like, Colangelo should definitely be raked over the coals for his handling of the whole situation, too. I'm just wondering, like, again, why we're, like, Okafor's in shape. Woo! Let's put on the party parrot. Like, he's a professional goddamn athlete. I would hope he's in shape. That should not be a reason where we should like feel bad for the guy. I feel bad for him because he got drafted into a situation where he couldn't succeed. That sucks. But this is part of the NBA. Is if you don't live up to expectations, and teams aren't willing to give up enough for you, you're going to be stuck in purgatory for a few years. He's going to have a chance to revitalize his career after this year. Like, it would have been much more screwed up if the Sixers picked up his option and then kept him on the bench for the next 2 years. At least they did him a solid of letting him go after this year. But, you know...
But they could have done more to, you know, find him a place.
Yeah. And
while we're on that subject, asking for 2 second-rounders is just lunacy. I don't think I've shared this on this podcast because it's just a strange little thing I have. But it seems like when you trade for a first-round draft pick, it's as difficult to acquire a first-round draft pick as if you are a guy going into like a bar with the mindset of, I need to get laid. So if you're going to go for 2 draft picks, you're actually going into a bar saying, hey, I want a 3-way.
Yeah, right.
Good luck, buddy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Godspeed.
If their expectations were really that high, that they deserve this whole mess. They deserve it. All right, let's go into our crushes of the week. These are guys.
Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, okay. Oh, wait. Can that just be your permanent crush from now on?
Hmm?
Is that just your permanent crush from now on?
Oh, it's my permanent. Okay. No. I'm not going to, you know, stick Donovan there. If he has a very bad week, I'm not going to select him. He's been playing well. Look, he is going to be a star, and I want my damn credit.
Yeah.
We had Matt Moore sitting here telling me I was wrong, and I was right. I want my... I was going to say due process, but that's not right. That's for Trump. I want people to eat crow is what I'm saying.
I will happily credit you. You were driving the Donovan Mitchell bandwagon this summer. You said, you know, you mentioned him as your rookie of the year pick.
Yeah.
Which I thought at the time was absurd. It is no longer absurd. He's playing that well. Like, if I said it on Twitter last night, like, thank God for Ben Simmons, or otherwise you would never let me hear the end of it. I mean, it's unbelievable. But Yeah, kudos to Donovan. He is playing out of his mind.
He's so good.
Yeah.
He's so good. Like, and people are still focused on his shooting percentages. Just remember, he had a rough start to the year. Like,
right.
He was really not shooting well, and it just took him a while. Like, oh my God, it takes rookies a while, you
right.
guys. Have you heard? It's
right.
a new thing.
Yeah.
To get going, and right now, he's just doing everything. I mean, and his confidence level is just it's so high. And that was one of the things that I looked at Louisville
mm-hmm.
back in the day. I mean, not to mention the long wingspan, the athletic ability, the upper body strength, and the ability to absorb contact. It was just this complete and utter confidence-ridden, thing that he just had. Whenever he stepped on the court, he was just like, I'm going to own everybody today.
Yeah, right.
Oh,
right.
There's a 7-footer. I'm going to bang in his chest and dunk on his head at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, and that alley-oop he had
against
the Clippers. It was so nasty, but it also, like, that's the perfect way to describe his thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that pass was so high.
Yeah.
He's 6'3", spinning off a defense. Like, and he still went up there, one-pawed it, and jammed it like it was nobody's business.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this dude is really going to be good. And it makes me hate the Bulls even more for trading the 16th pick in the Jimmy Butler trade, because at draft time, I was sitting there going, you know what? When I heard of the Jimmy deal, that the first report that came out was not including the 16th pick,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, okay, could have done better, but fine, 7th pick and 16, you can do something with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started immediately going, yeah, you can do something about that because Donovan Mitchell might slip.
Yeah.
Oh, you can definitely do something with that. Could the Bulls actually pull this off? No, of course they couldn't. Not only did they give out 16, they also sold off Jordan Bell. So that was... Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Imagine being a Bulls night that night. That was... That was not... Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
But... God. But... At least he landed in a place that actually respects development.
Yeah, you should be happy. Like, your boy is in a place where he can thrive for a team that actually will matter in the next half decade.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Can you imagine his sophomore season in the league?
Yeah, I mean, the Jazz, it's a testament to the Jazz for, they of course wanted Gordon Hayward to return this summer, but, like, they contingency planned very well. Like, having Donovan Mitchell and Rodney Hood as your 1-2 punch in the wings, that's a pretty goddamn good plan B.
I just really dig what he is doing. Like, I think people really got into the whole height thing.
Yeah.
I know you guys, you and Sarah were laughing at me when I mentioned that you should measure off shoulder height. shoulder height, but... I still think it's a completely valid point.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean...
I really do.
Wingspan definitely matters. Like, there's no question about that.
I don't care about 6'3".
Yeah.
6'4". Who the hell cares?
Right.
Doesn't matter. If you could have a tall head, it could affect your raw listing. Doesn't matter. look at wingspan. Look at jumping ability. Look at three-point field goal percentage. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to your crush because I know who it is. You alluded to it earlier.
I did.
And I'm all in on this one.
Yeah.
I am all in.
Kelly Oubre, as we mentioned earlier. I mean, as you said, Mort, like, he could be the fourth part of Washington's Big Four. Like, he is showing that type of development in his third year. He showed flashes of it last year even. But now he's really taking over as basically, like, the commander of that second unit. And that's what, watching that Wizards game against the Sixers the other night, which I refused to talk about because of the free throw debacle it turned into, but Oubre is just an absolute monster. He had a career-high 22 points that night, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, a block, and a 3 in just under 29 minutes. But if I'm a Wizards fan coming out of that game, like, that should have been a schedule loss. It's the second night of a back-to-back. Beal got elbowed in the face in the first half, and he missed the rest of the first half. John Wall's out for 2 weeks. Like, everything went against them. But Oubre and Jody Meeks played so well off the bench, and then they turned it, you know, then they started hack-a-benning midway through the fourth quarter and cut the lead down significantly. Like, the Wizards lost in the conference semifinals last year in large part because their bench just sucked. They didn't have anyone.
Yep.
Wall and Beal ran out of steam in Game 7, and that was that. This year, they've got the same starting five, but now Oubre's playing well. Jody Meeks is, you know, he's spotty, but he can play well. Tim Frazier is now their starting point guard until Wall comes back. When Wall comes back, he'll shift to the bench. The Wizards, like, I feel like both the Raptors and the Wizards are kind of flying under the radar so far this year just because they're doing what was expected of them. No one, yeah. You know, everyone kind of figured they'd just be in that top four of the East. Both are, like, right in that mix. I know Washington's a little further off that pace for now, but, like, the East standings are so clustered at this point. Like, Washington's eighth right now, but they're 2.5 games off of fourth. They'll bounce back. They're only a game behind the Sixers, and the Sixers are fifth. So, like, I think both of them are flying under the radar for that reason, but I don't know. Like, I think my whole takeaway from the first quarter of the season so far is, like, we thought the East playoffs were going to suck. They're going to be really fun. If the current standings hold, or even if the Knicks can push the Pacers out, especially if the Knicks can push the Pacers out, we get Kristaps in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Holy shit. Can you imagine, like, a Wizards-Raptors first-round series or a Bucks-Cavs first-round series?
Oh, Bucks-Cavs. Yeah.
Or, like, I don't care. It doesn't even matter. Like, just put any two teams together, mm-hmm. and it's going to be a fun series. Like, Joel Embiid against anyone.
Joel Embiid against Boston.
Yeah, that would be fun.
That would be very fun.
He
would average 15 rebounds.
And, like, the Cavs, I'm glad we had that episode a couple weeks ago where we asked, like, you know, is it time to panic over the Cavs? And both of us said no. This always happens. You know, there's always a 2-week lull where everyone panics because they don't play as well as they're supposed to. Now the Cavs have won 10 straight, just proving right that no one should have panicked while they were, you know, while they started slow. But
I'm still nervous about the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's still, the East is more open than it's been in a couple years. But, like, I'm just really excited because I think there are honestly 4 or 5 teams that could make it out of the East. And I would put Washington in that mix in large part because we know Wall, Beal, Porter are good. Gortat and Markieff Morris are good role players in that starting lineup. If the Wizards bench led by Oubre, Meeks, Frazier, if those guys get going, they can make it a series out against anyone, I think. They're not scared of Cleveland or Boston. We know that much. So,
yeah.
Kudos to Kelly Oubre for taking that big step forward, being untradeable in Mort's eyes, at least for DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah. Look, there are a lot of guys who are untradeable if the return is DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so that will do it for today's episode of the NBA Podcast. Thanks again for joining us. Reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all three of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. We're also being hosted on iTunes, so check us out there. Subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We would love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports. So check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek and I was joined by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian.